Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. Welcome back, crew, to the Cryptoconomy Podcast, and a happy Friday to, well, at least part of the audience here that actually manages to listen to these on the day that I release them. So happy Friday to that group, to everyone else. Sorry that it's not Friday anymore whenever you got around to listening to this one. We got a good one today. Nick Bhatia has released another article, and I sent him a message. This was actually released yesterday, and I sent him a message real quick, and he was like, "Yeah, man, do it as quick as you want. I don't care. Get it out tomorrow." So we're going to go ahead and just jump into his article, and it is titled "The Business of Bitcoin Cold Storage." And if you have not listened to anything that Nick Bhatia has done in the past or our interview with Nick Bhatia previously on the show, he is well versed in all of the financial side of this, and that's what he's keeping up with. And he coined the Lightning Network reference rate term, the ability to have a non-custodial way to essentially loan out funds that would be available for someone else to use, but there's no custodial risk. There's like a key management risk, but not explicit risk of someone running away with your money. That was just a fascinating concept, and you realize that this is the first asset ever in which that's possible, that you can loan someone the ability to make use of your funds without actually giving up full control of those funds. And that was just a fascinating concept. So I would definitely encourage you to go back and either read or listen to those articles. I'll drop the previous Nick Bhatia articles that we have done in the show in the show notes. And then, of course, listen to our discussion with Nick Bhatia. The interview was great. I had a lot of fun with that one, and I think you guys will like it. All right, so I will link to all of that stuff, and we'll discuss this afterward, because there is a ton of stuff going on in the custodial industry. The financial industry is just going crazy for the last couple of months, and for the next couple of months, I think it's going to ramp up and get really exciting. So let's go ahead and jump into Nick Bhatia's "The Business of Bitcoin Cold Storage." Bitcoin is digital gold, and this continues to be its most appropriate and concise metaphor. I recently discussed some parallels between gold and Bitcoin in an article about layered money and the Lightning Network. Link. In this writing, I'd like to focus on the storage analogy. The capital market of gold relies upon protected, armored, and insured storage vaults around the world. Without a robust vault infrastructure, multi-generational savings held in physical gold would be impractical. Bitcoin, going forward, will be no different. Individuals keep gold secured in their homes, but countries and central banks build vaults. Individuals keep Bitcoin private keys on laptops, hardware wallets, or pieces of paper in their homes, but countries and central banks will build vaults. Vaults storing Bitcoin private keys have been around for years, but Fidelity recently set an asset management industry precedent that will redefine Bitcoin's custodial infrastructure landscape. I have peppered this article with over a dozen articles, editorials, and media for anybody looking for a one-stop shop of deep dive material for Bitcoin's investment case and financial system integration. The investment case for Bitcoin. The investment thesis for Bitcoin has reached an incredible level of clarity over the past couple of years. Bitcoin is officially money's newest abstraction. Instead of reinventing the wheel, please refer to these particularly fantastic pieces by Vijay Boyapati and Iterative Capital, outlining Bitcoin's investment case, and an excellent piece by Pierre Richard, thoroughly covering Bitcoin's unique and decentralized governance. As we stand, the wealthiest university endowments are determined to allocate to Bitcoin's ecosystem, and sovereign wealth funds will not be far behind. The legacy asset management industry has finally woken up to the truth. The business of Bitcoin private key management has massive pent-up demand, and the time to service that demand is now. But I just hodl. Many holders store their Bitcoin themselves and never rely on trusted third parties for custody. These holders have financial sovereignty and are free of any counterparty risk. They also have a unique power. They can refuse to sell, limiting available supply at current prices. So why does any of this custodial infrastructure development matter to a holder? Because the future clients of Fidelity are theoretically short Bitcoin. Allow me to explain. I won't predict a date, but one day major governments and corporations will need to pay for a good or service from a seller that only accepts Bitcoin. These institutions will be forced to purchase Bitcoin in the open market to make delivery of payment. Therefore, institutions are short a forward Bitcoin obligation. The act of them purchasing Bitcoin in the future may appear as just a purchase, but in theory, it will be covering a short position they've had since Bitcoin's rise to global money status became evident. Therefore, holders have the power to exacerbate the mother of all short squeezes by not selling. Private key management. How do you store your Bitcoin? Is it on a Trezor? And is the Trezor in a safe deposit box at a bank? Where do you write down and keep your passphrase? Do you make your own paper wallets? On what computer did you generate them? And did you make sure the computer was never connected to the internet before and after key generation? Perhaps you employ the services of a company like Casa to help guide you through multi-signature cold storage while still maintaining both custody and full responsibility for your keys. Or perhaps you choose to keep your Bitcoin on an exchange. Everybody knows now that trusted third parties are security holes and scammers are everywhere. Now imagine you represent institutional money. You are the chief investment officer for your alma mater's endowment fund. How would this affect your decision on private key storage? Hopefully, you will be wary of your own ability to properly manage Bitcoin private keys and equally wary of an exchange's ability to do the same. The business of private key management. I can comfortably answer many of these storage questions with two sweeping generalizations. Firstly, holders of Bitcoin will never surrender their private keys and will continue to improve the science and practice of cold storage wallet infrastructure. Secondly, institutions buying real Bitcoin, not Bitcoin claims, will take delivery of their purchase into institutionalized cold storage solutions provided by well-established and insured asset managers and custodians. An endowment, central bank, or pension fund making its very first allocation to Bitcoin will not self-custody due to lack of cold storage expertise. Unlike individuals with an ambition for foreign sovereignty, these large institutions will trust third parties, diversify their risk, and buy insurance to protect their Bitcoin. There is no company in the world currently better suited to provide this institutional solution than Fidelity. Fidelity long ago started experimenting with the Bitcoin software protocol by spinning up a full node and successfully mining Bitcoin. With the release of a phenomenal white paper on institutional custody, Fidelity has not only positioned itself as a pioneer in the industry, but also as an authority on the emerging Bitcoin asset class. The literature released by the new digital asset subsidiary displayed an awe-inspiring grasp of the opportunities and challenges when building the custodial infrastructure for Bitcoin. Fidelity's position in the traditional asset management industry is one of modest dominance, along with a handful of other firms. The warning shot sent to the rest of the industry with the release of this white paper and underlying physical vaulted custodial solution is one that will leave Bitcoin's financial system integration unrecognizable by today's standards. I cannot stress enough the follow-on effects of Fidelity's arrival. Bitcoin does not need Fidelity to become legitimate. Rather, Fidelity launched Bitcoin custodial services because Bitcoin has already achieved legitimacy. Next up, I believe Northern Trust will be the next major industry player to announce a Bitcoin physical vault infrastructure and custody solution for its clients sometime in 2019. Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, State Street, and Bank of New York Mellon will follow, and within just a few years, the entire asset management industry will be involved in the Bitcoin ecosystem to some extent. Robust custody infrastructure paves the way for the creation of more investment vehicles such as ETFs and mutual funds. Good actors in the industry will have the opportunity to disclose public keys to prove fully reserved situations. ETFs are inevitable, and I hope to see the SEC specifically approve ETFs that will physically custody Bitcoin, such as the VanEck SolidX ETF. The SEC must approve Bitcoin ETFs that will set lofty industry standards for investment structure, cold storage, cybersecurity, and insurance. Physically delivered Bitcoin futures contracts offered by ICE, one of the world's largest derivatives exchanges, will settle into ICE's CFTC-regulated digital asset warehouse. ICE's storage solution may serve as an interim custodian for investors that are actively trading in and out of positions. Not only are all the major industry players already arriving to the party, but also the premise that the US government will somehow ban Bitcoin is becoming increasingly foolish. Becoming a major asset class. The price of Bitcoin in the future will be a function of how much of the world's wealth finds its way into the limited supply of 21 million Bitcoin. With a total market capitalization today of just over $100 billion, Bitcoin still appears as only a tiny grain of sand relative to the more than $100 trillion in financial assets held at the previously mentioned custodians. With new rails from the $100 trillion asset base to the nascent $100 billion Bitcoin economy, Bitcoin's network effects, discussed eloquently by Trace Mayer, will strengthen drastically. As investors reallocate their current investment portfolios to include Bitcoin, trillions of dollars in market capitalization appreciation becomes an inevitable result. A scenario beautifully laid out by both Turtemeester and Murad Mamudov. Endowments and sovereign wealth funds do not want to be late to this massive reallocation event, but neither will forward-thinking governments and central banks. Infrastructure for these investor types has arrived. Let the digital land grab ensue. All right, and there we have it. As you can see, there is a ton of stuff going on in the industry right now. He did a pretty good job of hitting most of the major elements. Goldman Sachs has made announcements recently. In fact, I think that's what these links go to. Yeah, Goldman Sachs is considering a custody offering for crypto funds. That was released on August 6th. Is the link that he's got there. I think there's another more recent article on that. And then we've got a Bloomberg article about custody that mentions State Street, JP Morgan, and Bank of New York Mellon. He's got a ton of links through this thing. He's got a link detailing out VanEck SolidX ETF. The links towards the end of how the network effects were discussed eloquently by Trace Mayer. That's to his Bitcoin Knowledge podcast and one of the episodes where he goes through the seven network effects of Bitcoin. Then a conference, I believe, speech from Turtemeester on the investment case for Bitcoin and how this capitalization happens with the as major investment portfolios begin to allocate toward Bitcoin, and then another, the Off the Chain episode, which was rather recent with Murad Mamadov. Definitely listen to that one. That was a really good one with Anthony Pompliano and Murad on the main overall investment case for Bitcoin and what the next couple of years and or decade could look like in this space. So that's just a bunch of really great stuff. He's literally got so many articles through here, and there's a number of things that I have not even checked out. He does a trusted third parties or security holes. So you've got that one from Nick Szabo, which actually I think I've done that one on the podcast. I might be able to link to that in the show notes. Let me see. I'm pretty sure I did that. I need to organize this stuff so much. Trusted third parties. Oh, whoops, if you spell it wrong. Yeah, trusted third parties or security holes. Okay, so episode 683, excuse me. And, man, I really need to organize this stuff better. When I can't find my own articles or my own stuff that I've read, I know it's going to be a whole lot harder for you guys to do it. Ansel Linder, when he actually gave me a shout-out on his Bitcoin Markets podcast, he made a note of that specifically of, you know, getting a playlist together for, you know, basic topics or like certain types of articles and authors and stuff. So I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to work on that over the weekend and see how much I can get done with it. I want to finish the reading list that I talked about in the last Guy's Take episode. I know that was just kind of an update episode, and probably not many people listen to it, at least at this point. It doesn't look like it. But it was just kind of a throwaway episode. I just wanted to update you guys on a few things. But the big thing was that I'm going to have a reading list of all the books that I think are really important for a deep dive into kind of the history and the culture and the technology and the money and both the mathematical and monetary theory behind all of this. Because I have really, really loved The Drunkard's Walk, which I just finished, and I'm adding that one to that list. And I realized I've never even posted it anywhere out there. I've been collecting this list of books that I think are like super critical, and I don't even have it on the internet. So that's a waste of work. And he also noticed links to the Iterative Capital Thesis, which we are going to cover on this show. And they have I've been in talks with Chris Dannon on LinkedIn. We've gone back and forth, and he is totally down with. They were trying to use VoiceBunny before, it looks like, to get an audio read of the Iterative Capital Thesis, and it looks like yours truly will be doing it now. So I'm really excited about that. I love that they're letting me release this on the show because it's such a great piece, you guys do not want to miss it. It's super thorough. It's probably going to take up a whole week, like I mentioned before, but we're going to be jumping into it soon. But this just goes to show Nick Bhatti is always on top of this stuff, and it's a pretty powerful argument when you begin to see that all these major custody solutions, like the entire the custodial asset management industry, is getting in on this. And this is one of the many reasons that I just don't think we have much longer in this bear market. Because the digital land grab will ensue very soon. I mean, they'll take their time. They'll dip their toes in the water, and they'll be very slow moving. They don't want to cause a FOMO situation. They don't want to cause a price spike. They're going to accumulate as long as they can and hopefully not drive the price up. That's their goal. And it will be a little while before I think things kick off, and we'll have to see some of these come to fruition. I mean, the ICE custodial storage solution is going to be on December 12th of this year. So this one's just around the corner. I don't know about the specific dates and what is available versus is not available yet with Fidelity. They linked to the Fidelity Digital Assets Medium article, Nick Bhatia did in his, of custody in the digital, custody in the age of digital assets. And it's a roughly 13-minute read, so probably like 15 or 16 out loud. And I think I'm going to, I don't think I actually read this one in full. So we might actually cover this one on the show. I might do this one on Monday before my article about Bitcoin Cash and their whole fiasco they got going on right now. So we will see. We will see. I'll think about this over the weekend while I'm working on other stuff and figure out what we're doing on Monday. And maybe I'll contact Fidelity Digital Assets. I mean, it's a Medium post. I can't imagine they'd be that upset about it. But I want to ask just in case. And we'll see if we can cover this one on Monday, maybe. So, don't forget to jump over to Nick Bhatia's article and drop some applause on that thing, because he let me do this like right out the gate. So I don't want to be driving people away from actually seeing the article. I mean, he said in the comment or in the message he sent me, he said, "I know it, a lot of people depend on you to read it to them or read it for them who can't get it." So he was like, "Yeah, do it as fast as you can. Pump it out tomorrow if you can." So I was really happy about that. But I want to make sure everybody go over there, drop some applause on this article, because this is a really good one. And Nick Bhatia has awesome work. And it's also fantastic that he just lets me go through all of these on the show, because I know some people are reluctant about it. All right. So I will also link to him on Twitter. That's at Time Value of BTC, which is based on his first article series. Again, which we've read the entire series for, so I will be sure to link to those in the show notes. So you can get to all those articles as well as a listen to all of those episodes. And again, I will do something serious about my organization of all the episodes, because there are over 200 episodes right now. Oh my God, I missed it again. I forgot. I was officially released my 200th episode I think it was yesterday, and completely forgot about it. And then when I was putting in looking at the iTunes details and noticed that it was episode 200, am I on 202 now? I don't even know. But I'm excited. I got 200 episodes out and failed to mention it on the show at all, and then almost forgot again today. So happy 200 episodes, Crypto Got Me Podcast. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy, Medium as well. And honestly, you can get to everything through the website at cryptoeconomy.life, and I'm going to be a whole lot better. And I'm not 100% sold. As time has gone on, I'm less and less happy with my layout and the design. So I'm going to have a lot of updates coming to it soon. I'm trying to just put on Bitcoin podcasts or, you know, some movie or something, and just focus down and work on the website for most of the days now. I got some pages ready to come out. I got that reading list on the way. I think we're going to have a lot of fun stuff on that website soon, and hopefully I'll have it looking a lot prettier than it is right now. But with that, don't forget to check out the website. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Drop me some feedback if you're loving this show, and drop me some Bitcoin if you think it adds value to your commute or your chores or whatever it is you're doing when you're listening to this show and me read all the best Bitcoin articles in the crypto space. Okay, guys, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. If you haven't listened to Shelling Out, you are failing. Go back and listen to it. And I will catch you all on Monday. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.